For August the 4th, 2023, we talk about My Friendly Neighborhood, Exoprimal, The Banished Vault, and much more. Welcome to Level 467. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We were supposed to have Dennis. We hope he's okay. He just hasn't responded. But
ominous start to the episode.
Yeah. Well, things are probably fine. So if he pops in, he'll pop in. Gosh, I'm already derailed because I opened with that one thing, and I probably should have opened with another. Ben, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. It is warm and summery, and I'm playing a lot of board games, and, I don't know. I didn't think of a pre-roll thing. I'm playing trivia tomorrow, so we'll see how that goes.
But like a bar trivia thing, or
yeah, over in West Seattle. So it'll be the first time visiting the particular place. So it'll be fun.
Nice. Do you know if there's a particular theme for it, or
just general trivia? Yeah. So yeah. I can cover like movies and geography pretty well, but we'll see. We'll see what's on the menu.
Yeah, man, I miss doing trivia. There's a trivia night at a bar locally here. That my brother, we keep trying to line up and go there with some friends that he has, and it's just not worked out because of various things. So I don't know. I just trivia is where I'm a Viking.
Like, it's tough to find the right place too, because it's like if you go and there's a team that like dominates or something, you're just like, oh, they're too sweaty, blah blah blah. I don't want to do that. But then like, you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
You want to have a shot at winning at least wherever you go.
Yeah. Yep. No, I just, I always get stomped by the sports thing, but if I went with my brother, he knows sports. So
yeah, you definitely have to do some, team building and choose judiciously.
Nice. David, how about you? What's going on?
Not a whole lot. I did over the last weekend went to a axe throwing, store. That's not quite right.
Establishment,
yes.
Okay.
So one of the I think I might have mentioned this before. One of the breweries in town bought a old middle school when the school system moved to a new building, and filled it up with a whole bunch of restaurants and, you know, businesses and stuff like that. And one of them is axe throwing. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was for a friend's birthday, and they had you could throw one-handed axes, two-handed axes, knives, and a entrenching tools, so like shovels. And they
for some
had
improvised throwing if you need to.
Well, I mean, you know from a military standpoint, you know, and and they also had a meat cleaver that you could throw.
Hell yeah.
So I threw all of them enough to at least get get one successful hit with each of them.
Okay.
But mainly messed around with the knives and the axes. But yeah, was a lot of fun. I didn't do this as much, but, after you had done it for a bit, they taught you some trick shots, like underhanded throws, things like that.
That seems like it'd be right up your alley.
Yeah, I did get the underhanded throw once. I also nearly took out the ceiling lights once.
Love that.
Oh, so it was indoor. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did they serve?
It's literally just in an old converted classroom.
Do they serve alcohol at this establishment as well?
Oh yeah, like it is literally primarily a brewery.
Dude, that is
a crazy combo.
It is so common, right? Like we have that up here too. Like you know, the Phoenix, David, like they've, I believe mm-hmm. they have axe throwing, like out in Mansfield. Like this is broken out in a lot of places. And it just like, how does your insurance person not just come in and snap your leg, your neck, like they're Steven Seagal? they should like, the second you say my bar has axe throwing, somebody should just pop your, just open you like a Coors, just twist the top right off.
Maybe they intimidated the insurance people by like having axes with them when they made the deal.
It's a gamble though, because you have to buy the axes first.
True. Yeah. You got to commit a little bit. Yeah.
See, I figure there's some sort of secret, you know, government program, you know, like FEMA zombie defense funding that pays the insurance for all these organizations.
I think it's just an ongoing escalation with toss sports. Mm. You know, you've got your I'm going to say the Ohio term for it, cornhole, you know, bag toss, whatever you got there. But like before that, it was horseshoes. You got ladder ball. The forbidden lawn darts.
I was gonna say, back in the day, they had lawn darts. That was like, that seems like peak danger right there.
Yeah, oh man, yeah. I have tried to find those. Cannot find those.
My dad has a set of jarts.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah, we used to play with them when I was a kid. It was so good.
I want that for my kids.
You know, and we were smart about it. It's like, you don't follow the directions. You don't stand right behind the target when somebody's throwing. You step off to the side, you know, so you don't get your nutsack tore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about caber toss? I feel like that is the ultimate toss sport.
I mean, that gets into feats of strength territory. Mm. You've got the, you've got Kube. It's been a while since I played Kube, but Kube rules.
What is that?
The Swedish like Viking chess?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That game's sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. Used to play that all the time at like old like work things.
Hmm. Yeah. I just remember the weird Assassin's Creed variant of it, where it was like Kube spliced with like a collectible card game.
Which was this in Valhalla? Is that what it was in?
Yeah, I think so. Or yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Like it was maybe it wasn't that one, but it was some sort of Viking board game. But then you could collect, like, you had one piece that you could collect that, you know, basically let you operate under variant rules.
Okay,
I know it was weird. Assassin's Creed is weird.
That's a fair takeaway.
Yeah. If you get like a whole bunch of different games of Kube going at one time with like, you know, a single body trying to coordinate all of them so everything happens, you would have Kubernetes.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, that computer science
play Kube while someone's trying to beat you with a stick, you have Kubaton.
Are we compensating for Dennis not being here by upping jokes?
Had to throw that one in. Dennis is fine. Kid craziness, nothing bad, but probably won't be on tonight. I will say, figured. Just glad you're good. Okay, there we are.
Three style official.
Yes, doing it three style. So glad you had fun going and tossing mm-hmm. some axes. It is fun to throw a shovel. Were you doing it like you ever done that just to freak somebody out? Just kind of throwing a shovel in their direction. It's real fun if you get it. If you get it to stick in the right angle, it does the bum, 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 bum.
These were like the hand shovels though. So you throw them similar to an axe.
Oh, well, we're talking about something different here.
Is it like a trowel or something?
Yeah, yeah. Like you've ever seen like the ones soldiers carry?
I was picturing like what I was picturing was the melee weapon that the soldier has in Team Fortress 2.
Yeah, pretty much. Yep.
Okay, that seems so much bigger. I'm just talking about like a, you know, just standard. You know, gardening shovel.
Oh, yeah, like throwing it like a spear? Yeah, no, that's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yes, there we go.
This may be like a upper Midwest thing or something.
A Mansfield thing.
Maybe. It's the one thing you can get that has like the necessary heft. If you throw it in an arc, it can come down and you get the real good fa-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah. Tell me I'm not I mean, obviously it's unsafe, but tell me I'm not crazy that other people do.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I mean that's totally a thing.
Okay. And yeah, I don't have a whole awful lot. I finally achieved something I had been working toward for a while, which is proper bias lighting behind my TV.
Are you aware
of bias lighting?
So is that like it turns a different color if you turn on Fox News?
I mean, if the predominant color on the screen is a different color than what you were on before, then yes. What it is like certain TVs will ship with this, but it's like LED, you know, LED lighting on the back of the TV that matches the color and placement of color that's coming out of the front, mm-hmm. with the idea being that reducing the contrast between the screen and what's around it will reduce eye strain. Also, it looks real cool.
Yeah.
Yeah,
a light show behind the TV.
Yeah, yeah, you know. So you know, you're playing Elden Ring, and just you got, you know, all kinds of like big colors and stuff going on behind it. It's neat.
Get a crimson light show.
Yeah, I've got a nice TV, but I didn't get one with that feature because it seemed frivolous to pay that much for it. If you have like Hue stuff, you can get like a little like HDMI bridge, but it's like $300, and that's not including the LED. I finally found one. It's kind of cool how it works. It's like LED strips that go on the back of your TV, just with tape. You know, it's got the sticky back. And it plugs into like a little dingus that has a camera that goes over the top of your screen. Kind of looking down at it, almost like a webcam that's kind of pointed down at the TV, but out of the way. And you like calibrate it. Like you put these like little foam dots on the TV first. So you set like, okay, here are the corners that you're looking for. Right. And then it just does it in real time. And instead of paying probably $400 all in, which is ridiculous, you pay like, I don't know, I got it on sale for $70.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah. So I've been looking to achieve this for a while, and this is a way that I had not thought about solving the problem.
I'm trying to think of what else you could do with it, or like what else you could point at besides the TV to make like interesting light shows. But yeah, I don't know. That's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, with the right chemicals in your system, anything.
Well, yeah, with the right toads for my terrarium on sale for a low, low price today and today only. You can also set it like it has like a little microphone on it so it can react to sound. So it'll be like in music mode too. Light's good. So yeah, that's my news. This is something very local and has nothing to do with video games, but it's important to me. Anybody in Ohio, early voting is open, but next Tuesday on the 8th is the special election with issue 1. Go ahead and vote no on that bad boy, because the extremely corrupt Ohio State House is trying to raise the threshold for citizen-led constitutional amendments from a 50% threshold to a 60% threshold, trying to head off ballot measures for abortion is what it is. Like trying very desperately and throwing a bunch of money into it.
Yeah, they basically decide that they don't like democracy.
Yes. Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's kind of been a thing. But...
Well, yeah, no, it's been a bit of a theme.
My dad was telling me about this since he's still in Ohio. But I was surprised by that solution because that will make it equally hard for them to change things in the future if there is something that they wanted to change.
Yep. It's but the idea being, well, if we're going to hold the legislature forever because we can gerrymander it,
yeah,
then it's fine. We do not feel threatened.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and by that same token, the left is coming in, and you know, it makes it easier for the other side to get stuff passed too. But well, no, it doesn't make it easier. It keeps it exactly the same. You both know to keep it the same. Yeah. So just putting that out there. I know that we have Ohio listeners. And if you're not in Ohio, just understand some of the fuckery that's going on here. A lot of the time it's skates below. It's skates below the news, like the stupid shit that they try to pull. But it's worth knowing that just because we're technically, you know, in the north, doesn't mean we don't have that going on.
Yeah, our big news down here is that our idiot governor just cost my city probably hundreds of jobs.
Oh, doing the whole DeSantis like woke business thing?
No. So, Tuberville has been, you know, holding up promotions to the military, and has been, you know, because he's butthurt about the military supporting, you know, soldiers taking time off to get abortions, and then also, you know, saying all this stuff about how, you know,
white supremacists are Americans.
Right, exactly.
He has to be the dumbest man alive.
Yeah, and so they, in what is definitely unrelated news, they just announced that Space Force is no longer going to be located in Huntsville, Alabama.
Huh. Are they moving it out to Space Commands in Colorado?
Right. Yeah. So Colorado was only supposed to be a temporary measure.
Yeah.
And they're just keeping it there. So that's something that, like, the local economy was definitely counting on.
Mm-hmm. Man. Yeah, shit sucks. Well, let's talk about video games to distract ourselves from it. We've got the usual kind of show for you, three style though it is, with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
the grind?
The grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past period of time or so. Can I go first?
Please. Sure.
Yeah. So last week I teased talking about Rain Code, the new game from at least some of the people behind Danganronpa. Jala is going to be on at some point here in the next couple of weeks. So I'm going to save that just so I don't basically scoop her. We can talk about it together without going over ground. And so that was new, something I played, but also I streamed what turns out to be the majority of a game called My Friendly Neighborhood.
That sounds ominous.
Yeah, go ahead and take a look at this. This is the new new hotness in horror games right now. What it is, so the concept, you are a repairman who is called in because this old, like, Sesame Street Muppets style show, like, their studios have come back online after the show being off for decades. And you're called in to shut down the transponder because it is, like, broadcasting over other stuff. And when you get in there, you find that the building is in this BioShock-like state of being taken over by the puppets. You know, like, you know, the life-size, you know, Muppets walking around, like, talking and doing their dialogue, and also, like, you know, when they see you walking towards you and saying, hey, you're a friend, coming up and then strangling you.
Oh, so it's Five Nights at Ernie's.
That's a really good way to put it. The first night that I played it, I've never been more sure that an indie horror game was going to make millions of dollars.
Wow.
Because it is kind of a combination, you know, it does have that Five Nights at Freddy's appeal. It is hitting at, and I think much more successfully doing, what the Bendy games, like Bendy and the Ink Machine, like what they were getting at, you know, the, you know, twisted television, you know, twisted old kids television show movie kind of thing, come into life kind of deal. Something that I appreciate about this is, you know, it is a first person survival horror game. There is, you know, combat so it's not like a scorn thing where it's just kind of, you know, admittedly, tacked on. The creator of this, whose name, God, I keep on forgetting his first name. I believe it's John
Szymanski.
So Szymanski, this is the brothers of Dave Szymanski, the creator of Dusk and Iron Lung. There's that so relationship. Is
video game making ability genetic?
I mean maybe.
This is like the Jackson 5 of making video game family over there.
Yeah. But like, you know, Dusk and Iron Lung, like Dave Szymanski has shown, like, you know, really great affection for horror and survival horror stuff. Like, this works in just a whole bunch of survival horror, like, illusions and tropes, but without any gore. Also the reason why I believe that this is going to make millions of dollars, which is, this is very scary, but it is not like body horror kind of stuff. Mm. Right. But when I talk about like, it pulling in stuff from, survival horror games. So have either of you played the remake of the original Resident Evil?
I have not.
Okay. In the remake of that, a concept that they added was when you kill a zombie, what you have to do is you have to find some fuel. You've got to burn the body, because if you don't do that, after a certain amount of time, that monster will re-raise and come back as a Crimson Head. Okay, just a faster, more aggressive zombie that has claws, just a, you know, much bigger problem. So what that does is it makes it so that you have, you know, like, yes, you can, you want to get around this thing. You can kill it, but killing a zombie safely is not just limited by ammo. It's limited by how much fuel you have, by how much you can find, whether or not you have the lighter on you, you know, et cetera, and down the line. This combines that with something that is present in Silent Hill 4 of all games, which had those ghost enemies that you couldn't do anything about for the first half of the game, but then you started getting consumable items that would pin them in place for the rest of the game. So in this, when you use your gun, which is, it shoots letters is what it does. I don't know how it works. It just shoots letters, you know, but when you knock these things over and they ragdoll down and they're, you know, big crazy death animation or whatever, it's very funny. You have duct tape. Okay. If you do not duct tape one of these things down, the next time you come back into the room, they're going to be back up and active. So you have to, you know, decide like, yes, I'm, you know, using my ammunition to take them down. You know, understanding that as I'm going around and solving the puzzles, I'm going to have to be, you know, maybe be coming back through this place again, making a decision. If I kill something that I couldn't get around, because it got a hold of me, do I use this resource that I have very limited amounts of to hold this one down? Because doing that in like a far off little storeroom is not going to be as important as doing it in a main thoroughfare or a hub area. Right. Yeah. And like it is plugging into something that is extremely important in survival horror design, specifically of this type, with a puzzle box space, which is like, yes, there is a lot of backtracking, and that's forcing you to get a mastery of the space, you know, et cetera. But the extra step that you need to take that like early Resident Evil and Silent Hill really get a hold of is that exploration is a resource. You know, the more rooms you go in, the more, you know, ground you cover, you know, if you forget something and have to go back through a dangerous area, like you are using resources, you are going to be taking damage. You're going to be expending ammo. Right. And this is taking that in and implementing it in a very canny way by pulling this mechanic, these two mechanics from, you know, not really obscure, but you know, one of them is obscure, but pulling these mechanics in and like fusing them together for exactly the kind of game that they're trying to make. It's real cool. Yeah.
Are you able to like run around them at all? Or do you like kind of have to face them if you are in a room with them?
You're able to run around them. there's a little bit of a stealth thing. It's almost exactly like Resident Evil, where like zombies will be like preoccupied with something when they're in the when they're in a room. Sometimes they'll be on a patrol and walking, you know, and walking around. You know, in this one, like they'll be off doing you know, doing something over in a corner. And you just, okay, I hope I don't have to go over in that direction. Because then they're going to start coming after me. What I don't want to do is, oh gosh, get too close to them. So there's a difference between like aggroing them and getting close enough that they can grab. If I have a complaint, it's that, their reach is really, really wide. And they give you a wrench. They give you like a Bioshock like wrench to act as your fallback melee weapon. This thing has no reach. So there's basically, no, as far as I can tell, I've not found a use for this thing that is not like stun them with the gun, and then switch and get up close and then finish them off. That is viable, but it is not a it's not like an emergency use kind of deal. Like, you can't use that to get yourself out of trouble if something ends up like sneaking up on you.
Gotcha. Yeah. That's interesting.
There's also like these Muppets, like they're constantly talking, like going through scripts, but they're you know, kind of off because they've been going for so long, and there's obviously something supernatural, or at least, you know, so technological that it might as well be supernatural, kind of going on. Like, they're always talking, so you can always tell where they are, and you get into these big rooms where they're kind of talking over each other, and it's actually like, it's grating. There's no denying the fact that it is ridiculously grating, but it does add to the like to the tension of it, of like getting around, like, okay, have they heard me? are they coming after me? Like, listening in to see who the nearest one is and like determining their alert state. Mm-hmm. It's pretty good. Somebody in the chat, because I was streaming this, said this must be like this must be what Resident Evil 4 is like for people who speak Spanish. Because it's true, in Resident Evil 4, like, if you're not a, you know, even if you understand what they're saying, if you're not a native Spanish speaker, like, the barks can kind of fall into the background, you know, and you're listening for, you know, a few specific ones, you know, like the Trasta T, you know, stuff like that. But this is, you know, just constantly, and you kind of can't ignore it, because of the way it's delivered very well. I don't know. It's a neat game. Not overall very scary, which is a thing that can go against it, but like, as a study of survival horror mechanics more broadly and like illusions, things like that, like, I feel very served as a fan.
Nice.
Yeah.
I see that it has a Resident Evil like packing system.
Yes, it does have inventory Tetris.
Mm.
Yeah. And like it gets the best of both worlds, because you have inventory Tetris, but you also have the item boxes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there are like literal save rooms with save room music. Right. Oh, this is cool. You find coins. There are nickels all throughout the studio. When you go to save, it costs those coins, so it's like one coin for a save, but there are also like healing stations, and this is in addition to the mobile pickup, mobile health pickup economy that's there. So like, they're limiting your saves, which I imagine that would be something some folks would want to turn off in the options, because I don't know, that might be, you know, unduly stressful, but they're making it so that your saves pull on the same resource that is like a full heal that does not, it is a full heal that does not take up an inventory space.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Game mechanics are about trade-offs, and this knows how to give you real cool trade-offs.
So
it looks like a really polished game for, you know, only being made by two people.
Yeah. It's very polished. This is, you know, obviously been worked on for a long time with a lot of love and care related to that. And I never ever talk about this. I will say that, this is one where the price is gonna come in and be a factor, because it is launched at $29.99, which, go for it. you really ought to, like, if that's what your game is worth, you know, just go ahead and do it. Understand going in that this is going to be a really short game. This is going to be in you know, an 8-hour game, and it, you know, in line with other survival horror games, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm mostly toward the end, you know, after a couple of nights of playing. So, you know, take that into consideration. It's not bad that they did it, but that may be a thing that'll turn you off.
It seems like a lot of newer indie games are at that price point, and it's just kind of inflated to that. It's, yeah. I'm not trying to comment if that's right or not, but
yeah,
does seem to be trending like that.
I mean, just the fact of the matter is everybody can decide what that what that means to them. And also, games are only temporarily that price, you know.
True.
Like,
true.
Every game becomes basically free if you're patient, you know. I mean, it's true, right?
If you wait for Christmas time. Yeah.
So, you know, it's just understand that that's that could be a factor for you.
Yeah.
So I've got something completely off topic, but kind of on topic.
Okay.
On this. Are we done with the immediate whatever?
Yeah. No, I don't know that I have anything more to say. But the last point that I wanted to hit was the price.
So this is a little pre-rolly, but kind of related to this. My got a call from my parents. They're on vacation in, like, middle of nowhere, some you know, national park in New England.
Okay.
And they're like, telling me about their thing, and they're like, oh, and also the world's biggest genomics research company has a big installation here.
Okay.
I'm like, oh, that's kind of weird out in the middle of nowhere. And they're like, yeah, you see, what they did is they bought this old mansion and fixed it up real nice.
Oh, well, that's a red flag right there.
Yeah.
So did you explain to them that there is precedent?
Yes. I explained that might be something to be careful of.
Oh, I love that. That's really good. Yeah.
No, this actually looks really cool, and I love the letter gun. My only disappointment, I was kind of hoping just from the way it looked, that was a nail gun, and the idea was gonna be like, you don't actually kill the puppets, you just kind of nail their felt down.
I mean, it's like that, just with extra steps. You don't kill these things. Very importantly, when you tape them down, like, they're still alive and they're still talking. Oh. they're undeterred.
That is funny.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Any other questions about My Friendly Neighborhood?
Huh? It looks cool.
Yeah. Who's got something for me?
I got something.
Okay.
Go for it.
I also just have one game, but it is also a new game.
Ooh.
I picked up The Banished Vault, which was...
Oh, shit, this looks really good.
Yeah, I was going to say, if I was actually going to suggest in, like, the post-roll that you guys check this out, this looks amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess let me describe what it is for the listener. It's basically like a single-player board game in space, but the lore is kind of like one of the stronger points of the game. The art style and the aesthetic is really, really cool. The premise is you are like a religion that is in a universe that is being taken over by something called the Gloom, which is just kind of like this ever expanding like darkness. And so you are like, you are managing a collection of like devout like priests of this religion. And you have this like cathedral spaceship. And the idea is you're going from galaxy to galaxy to build and collect enough resources, specifically to build this thing called stasis, which will put your people under while you travel to the next galaxy to wake up there to make more resources. So it's similar to like the conceit of like FTL, where it's like this constant unending pursuit that you kind of have to like stay one step ahead of. But the main difference is that instead of there being any sort of like fighting or anything like that, it's this like resource management, and you're constantly making these like trade-off decisions similar to like what you would find in a board game. So, and then, you know, from there, the galaxies you go to, there's always this kind of like lingering threat where you might roll just a bad galaxy where you get to one and there's like nothing there. There's not the resources you need and you can get like screwed over. So there's this kind of, in each galaxy that you have 30 turns to do whatever you need to do. And the board is like kind of set up, kind of as this like, almost like bar graph or like histogram almost, where it's like, it's basically a central line that goes from your ship to the sun. And there's branches that go off at right angles only in one direction of paths you can go down to different like planets. It takes more, one of the resources is fuel, and it's like a very important resource because that gets spent whenever you travel from anywhere to anywhere. And the cost of like fuel that you spend is dependent upon the ship that you have, like basically like how big it is. If you're like landing on a planet, you're using like thrust instead of like just your you're using like a different engine that uses fuel differently. And then ships by themselves just have like an efficiency rating to them. So there's like maybe like four different factors that goes into like how you're even consuming fuel on top of everything else. But the idea is you're trying to kind of cart people around this galaxy, kind of pick and choose what planets you want to go to, and kind of pick and choose what item or commodity you're going to try and like max produce. And so I've completed a single run and I'm on a second one right now. So the meta goal is that there's another resource that you can make. It's like alloys and elixirs. And if you have two of each of those, you can build a scriptorium on what they call hallowed planets, which are just like special planets, I guess, of like religious significance. But there's one hallowed planet per solar system, at least that I've seen so far. And if you build four scriptoriums, you can retire your people and like call it quits. Every jump that you go to another galaxy, like all the, your characters have like a faith rating, and it essentially goes down by 1 point, with each galaxy jump. And there's ways for you to push it back up, but you need resources to do that. And that faith will, the mechanics are like somewhat dense. They have like a 50 page game manual in game.
I mean, somewhat is very generous. This is a very complex game.
I think it looks more daunting than it is. And the game manual, I think, contributes to that as well. Cause you look and it's like, oh, 50 pages, my God. But like, it's not that complicated. Like once you get the basic gist of like how to go to a planet, how to build something and start extracting resources for it. It's pretty second nature and it's not too complicated.
And you're also making judgment calls with like basically random encounter kind of things too, right? Like, okay, what do you do in this particular situation kind of deal?
There's not actually a lot of that. The only real randomness they have is if you go, there's like danger levels, which are basically like checks at certain places. And it is typically associated with going to kind of like the higher risk planets, like the ones that either have better resources or that you're able to do more actions on. Depending upon where you are in the solar system, that's how many like actions you can do per round. And the closer you get to the sun, the more actions you can do per round. It's like the farthest away, it's like two per round, and the closest might be like five or six per round.
Is your ship like solar powered, or do they justify any of this? Like
They probably do, but I did not read that quickly enough. I think I just skipped past it or something. But it's probably somewhere in the game book, but I'm not going back through the lore section because it's like another 50 page. I don't want to do it. But it's an interesting like risk reward because it takes a lot more fuel to get out to that point from your ship. So you have to kind of like plan around it. Like you can only give yourself enough fuel like to go one way, as long as you're planning on building like a fuel generator on whatever planet you're landing on to build that to get back. But that's a little bit dicey. If anything goes wrong, yeah, then you're kind of screwed. But at these hazard points that are kind of closer to the center, basically all it is, this is a check where it is, you need to roll this numbers and it's 1 to 6. And whatever your faith is how many D6s you roll. So it's like the strongest challenges are you need to roll a 6. And so they give you kind of a probability table of it. If you have like 6 die, then it's like, I think it's like a 75% chance, 76% chance. So it's like fairly good. But if you only have 1 die, like it, you're necessarily going to take whatever punishment gets to you. I believe if you drop to 0, I think you die, your character dies. And you have 4 characters. Yeah, and then each ship has like a different capacity of how many people it can hold. So you're kind of doing this thing where it's like you have 4 people and 3 ships. So there's kind of a question of like who you want to go where and like what should each ship's job be.
Yeah. It's like like crew management kind of thing. Or I don't know, worker management, I think, is they're doing like a worker placement kind of thing.
Yeah, a bit like that. But you're making these kind of long-term commitments where, you know, say I forget to bring like enough like titanium on one of my ships when I'm going to set up a planet, I might not have enough fuel to send that back, or I might have been banking on something else. So you kind of have to roll with it and be like, okay, well, I'm going to reroute this other ship to go there because they can have some supplies that they can lend to them. And then they can both do this. And in the 2 or 3 turns that they're waiting by themselves, I'll help them build this other structure that I need. And they can just take actions to generate that resource so that I'm not completely wasting their turns. Yeah. But there have been times where I've accidentally left someone on a planet and they don't have a ship there. And there's like literally nothing for them to do there. And it sucks. So it's like you can feel the lack of efficiency. You can feel the guilt of that. But I can't overstate that the art style is really, really strong.
This is really gorgeous. Like, it's
kind of reminds me of Return of the Obra Dinn.
It's like a cross between that. So it's like because it's the monochrome, you know, like the one bit for the hand drawn art. Mm-hmm. But like the interface elements, it's like Return of the Obra Dinn illustrations mixed in with like Deus Ex Human Revolution black and gold with lots of astronomical filigree. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, lots of like orbit lines and things like that. Like, I don't know. Aesthetic does count in a strategy game, even as crunchy as it is. Like, Frostpunk would not be as compelling of a strategy game to me if it was just, you know, just presented as the numbers, right?
Yeah. So it's a really beautiful game. I do question like how much depth the game has. Because it's not like XCOM in the sense of like the first game that I played, I was able to win. And then afterwards, it unlocks some like game settings that you can adjust where there's like 2 higher difficulty levels that you can up it to. But I always like, I don't know, I always feel like I always have a hard time like increasing I'm not like Dennis where it's like... it's like if the game, like, you should set normal as like a good challenge, I feel like, not make me like choose opt into that route, I guess.
Figure out what the real one is, like, you know, normal by calling it normal or standard or what have you. You know, the one that comes out of the box, that is a statement of like developer intent.
I wish it was more balanced, like Slay the Spire, where it's like, maybe on your 4th or 5th run, you might be able to beat it, but you definitely need to like kind of like learn like learn how the game works and come up with some like higher level thinking or smarter plays in order to win.
Does anything carry over between runs?
I don't believe so. Between like solar system jumps, yes. That's like part of the strategy. But yeah, in between runs, no. You generate like a random seed for each run that you do as well. So you can replay exact maps if you want by putting in the same seed.
In some ways that strikes me as kind of unfortunate, just because that then means if you like jump to a system, where you can't win, it's like you might as well immediately restart. Whereas it seems like with the tone of this, it would be interesting if there was some incentive to take the approach of like, oh, I'm going to like try to get as much done as I slowly, you know, suffocate as the ship runs out of air.
Yeah. I mean, I assume that like, even though it's a random seed, that you don't get started on like a completely like barren solar system for your first one. Like, I imagine they program around that so that even if it's procedurally generated, it there's different, you know, like where they give you the challenges are probably somewhat marked out.
Yeah.
The one thing though is like there needs to be more there, I guess, from what I see now, because it does feel too easy. Like, on the second run, the first solar system I made, you only need 2 stasis per traveler that you have. Mm-hmm. So you need 8 per solar system. But again, like, the idea is, like, when you get to the solar system, you should just focus on doing, like, 1 or 2 things and only doing that and just doing a lot of that. So I made 32 of stasis and I made, like, a shit ton of fuel. So, like, my entire inventory of the chapel is just fuel. And so now when I get to the second one, it's like, I think I'm going to make alloys and the other thing that you can build the scriptoriums with. So by the end of the second solar system, I probably will have enough resources that I can just build a scriptorium and be done with it. And not actually need to do anything for the second 2 levels. So that's like kind of where they need to adjust like the balance of the game.
Does it cost extra fuel to build a scriptorium where no murder will take place, causing a journeyman artist and scribe to question his passion for the craft as he solves a mystery revealing corruption at the heart of the town centered around the church?
Are you reading a game description, or is this something else that you're referencing?
Pentiment.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. All right. Yeah. All right. Man. Sorry. Hard to jump from like far future science fiction back to 1500s Germany, but yeah.
Sorry, I did not mean to interrupt you for a dumb joke.
No, bringing up Pentiment, I think, is always a good decision for the mystery. Mm-hmm. So I mean, this is a fun game. I think I've already put like 11 hours into it, and I'll probably play it for probably 10 or 11 more hours, I would guess, until I get super bored with it. The other mechanic I haven't talked about, I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff. I've only kind of like scratched the surface of like different buildings you can build. Mm-hmm. Like, you can, like, next to each planet is kind of this like orbital space. And sometimes there's like gases there you can collect. Mm-hmm. So like carbon dioxide or methane and stuff like that. And so those have their own set of structures that you can build. Some resources you can't really, like, a planet will just have a general description of what resources are on them, but it's not until you land that you see the actual layout of the planet. And so it's on this like 2-dimensional like XY grid or whatever on the ground, but you don't know how many spaces will be available. Like, sometimes spaces are tight, sometimes the resource nodes are like directly next to one another. And you might have to choose, like, I can only harvest this resource or the other one. I don't have enough room to harvest both of them. And then sometimes the resources, there's like a depth to them. So they could be like at depth 1, 2, or 3. And you then need to build like a building that just is committed to, now you can mine resources at this depth. So there's some kind of complexity there. And those are kind of things that I've like interacted with somewhat, but there's definitely more to interact with, which I would like to see. There's also like a bunch of buffs you can build, where it's like you can build buffs from the orbital that'll affect the planet, like, oh, a resource scanner. So now you can see like resources that you didn't before, or like there's like an efficiency type of building where you can get more actions on the planet. Mm-hmm. So it's like random stuff like that I haven't interacted with that seem interesting. So perhaps I might up the difficulty to see if that makes it more fun, but it's certainly stressful when it starts getting towards the end. It's like, it doesn't seem necessarily appealing to like, introduce more stress in the gameplay than there already is.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Is there, do you encounter like opposition because you are like a roving space cult, like leaving seeds of fanatics behind in little colonies as you go?
Yeah, there's not really much life you interact with on the planets. Every planet might have artifacts on it. And so As an action, you can look for artifacts, and artifacts will have a certain knowledge amount to them. So for example, it's like, oh, I found a skull. This is like worth like 20 knowledge versus, oh, I found this like piece of this computer chip. It's worth like one knowledge. Yeah. Those like, so normally like resources stack have like 9 to a stack in your inventory space. So it's like, if I want to stock up on like oxygen, I'll have 9 oxygen per space or 9 fuel per space. These artifacts are just a single stack, so like one per space. So it behooves you to transport them back to your ship, but some are worth the transportation time and some are not.
Yeah.
And so figuring that out. And what you do with that knowledge is at the end, when everyone's in hibernation, there's these randomly generated like optional perks that you can assign to people. Like when this person mines iron, he mines an additional resource. Like an additional iron on top of that, or this person takes an extra action every turn, that sort of thing. And so you can buy those and upgrade your people. The problem is that they feel very random since they're randomly generated.
Yeah.
Like, and this is kind of like tapping into like board game design more than video game design at this point, but it's like, that's probably something that would be better if it was like telegraphed ahead of time. And then like, it's something that you could kind of build towards instead of just being like a random roll. But, anyway, there's just like a lot of cool ideas in here, though. It's very interesting to play this because it is very much like a hybrid of a board game and a video game. And it's like most of the artwork and stuff like that is essentially like virtual game pieces, because even like the buildings you build, it's like, oh, that could be like a miniature in a board game. Like it's not, you know, it's not trying to be like hyper realistic or anything like that.
Yeah. And like the dice you roll are like physically modeled.
Yeah. Yep. So very interesting game. This one, similar to what you said, the price point on this, I think it's like $22, or I think it was $25, but it was like 10% off when at launch. This is similar to a review I took, that the game I talked about last week, where it's like, this would 100% be worth it if you get it for like $5 or $10, I think. At the current price point, I kind of leave it to the listener if they think it's worth it to them. So it's kind of makes it a less praise that I could heap upon it because of the price point, I guess. But yeah, it's certainly interesting. The aesthetic's great and the music's pretty good. So
nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks really good to me. Yeah.
The ship's so cool. Like the church ship symmetrical thing is really cool looking. But anyway.
Yeah. I don't know. So you said you only had one?
That's all I got.
That's all you got. The Banished Vault. David, how about you?
Not a ton. You know, continuing on with Diablo, I've reached level 40 on my new character, which is kind of where it starts transitioning to endgame.
Okay.
But really not too much particularly notable there. This actually tomorrow they're going to be doing a big run through of the new balance changes that they announced earlier, and this is sort of their apology for screwing a lot of this stuff up so badly.
Right.
Most notably, my character should become dramatically more powerful.
Okay.
At
the expense of
not really anything so far.
Okay. Dramatic power is in relative terms, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So basically, the class I was playing was widely considered the weakest.
Which one?
Sorcerer.
Okay.
And so ideally, it'll be brought up more in line with the other classes. Most notably, it should be a lot more survivable. So there's less instances of getting one-shotted in the end game.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But really, probably more interesting is I finally got a chance to give Exoprimal a shot.
Oh yeah. Ooh. The squad shooter about dinosaurs.
Yeah. So, you know, I mentioned it last time. Basically, you're on a island, you're a exosuit pilot, and there's a evil AI that's taken over and is trying to run experiments, make you fight in order to gather data as experiments in order to develop the ultimate exosuit. And those experiments consist of the form of you fighting hordes of dinosaurs.
Yep.
It's a very weird game. Even more weird, though, is, you know, once I got into it, I found out that actually in the game's lore, like, the portals that summon dinosaurs, although the AI can, you know, can basically make those happen, and that's kind of its thing, apparently they happen also all over the world naturally.
Okay.
And so the reason you're running around with an exosuit is there's a, you know, mega corporation that has developed the ability to predict these portals, and so then fields soldiers to basically protect people.
Mm-hmm.
You literally see at the beginning of the game, like, weather forecasts now include the chance of dinosaurs.
Okay.
So, like, that tells you, like, the game is in a very strange spot in terms of mostly being a serious, if kind of quirky, action game.
Okay.
But then sometimes veering into straight-up comedy.
Yeah.
Well, sounds about right.
Do the dinosaurs have feathers? Big question.
They do not. So
interesting.
You know, maybe this is what the AI thought dinosaurs look like, and you know, he's only seen Jurassic Park.
Fair point. Yep.
Probably the other interesting thing is it's actually fairly story based. So you have your home base, which is this, I guess it's a like cargo plane, kind of like a military cargo plane. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got a full complement of crew, you know, each with their own, you know, voice acted personalities, all that stuff. But then each mission you run, you're gathering intelligence that contributes towards solving the various mysteries that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, things like, you know, why is the AI so obsessed with you fighting or dinosaurs? Or what happened when the island space elevator collapsed? Things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I should also say, just to make this weirder, the AI can actually control time and alternate dimensions.
Okay.
And so the combat actually takes place like 4 years in the past. So, you know, when the AI decides it wants you to be part of a test, it basically teleports you into the island's past 4 years.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, just a way of describing, like, instancing and the fact that this is mission-based runs and the struggle continues.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And it's also in terms of a thing where, like, the island as you currently see it is completely destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the island 4 years ago is, like, you know, like an actual urban setting. Mm-hmm. You know, not everything's destroyed. Yeah. So it's kind of a way to justify that.
It's an urban setting, like a city?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yep. And then the other kind of element with that is canonically all of the other players are you from different parallel dimensions.
Okay.
And there's at least one set of other players and crew that are, you know, like actual NPCs that show up in the cutscenes, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
So it's a very weird game. You know, a surprising amount, like I said, of cutscenes, that sort of thing. In terms of actual gameplay, it's very Overwatch-like.
It's like a hero shooter squad kind of thing.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I would say kind of a mashup of Overwatch with World War Z in terms of particularly the Raptors kind of follow the, what do they call it, like the crowd physics of like World War Z or
Days Gone.
Was that zombie game?
Days Gone.
Yeah, Days Gone. And, you know, with that, you know, a lot of the fun is the fact that, you know, your mecha's abilities, you know, like, you know, shooting giant lasers that would just send dinosaurs ragdolling off the screen, you know, those sorts of things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a good game. It's fun. It's weird.
How distinctive are the different, so if it is a hero shooter, like how distinctive are the different characters or classes or however it presents itself? Like what's the ability disparity?
Sure. So there's three broad kind of, I don't know, like macro classes, you know, assault, tank, and support.
Mm-hmm.
And then in each of those, there's about, 3 to 4 classes in that. For the assault, which is what I've mainly played, I know there's basically a grenade launcher, explosives oriented character, a gun oriented, a assault rifle oriented character, melee, and then sniper rifle. Mm-hmm. And then I know for the tank, there's a guy with like a giant shield, a guy that with like a chain gun that's kind of more the just, you know, heavy weapons type thing. Mm-hmm. And then some sort of samurai that I think focuses on like perfect parries and stuff.
Hmm. You can parry a dinosaur, you know,
there's
in
a
game.
Fair amount of difference. I will say probably my biggest criticism with this is that there's so many enemies and often so tight of corners and you have so many random abilities that a lot of it, unlike Overwatch, it doesn't feel to me like you're really being that tactical in how you're deploying your abilities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially with this being a horde shooter, you're kind of just, as soon as something comes off of cooldown, you probably want to use it.
Gotcha. Yeah. So it's kind of like sugar on top of the regular fighting.
Right, exactly. I also, and I'm sure there are people that disagree with me, but I feel like games need to stop trying to get people to play healers. Like, no one wants to do it.
Hmm.
Like, just, it's not going to be a thing. Stop trying to make it a thing. And I say that because I actually spent some time making a healer, and it's simultaneously deeply frustrating because you have no direct way to actually advance the, you know, advance the objectives and, you know, directly contribute towards winning. But at the same time, it's also stressful because you are probably the most important class in terms of determining whether your team wins.
So it's just a question of like how much like personal glory you want from taking action in the game as opposed to, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's almost a thing where it feels to me like, and granted, this is just from someone who doesn't like playing this kind of thing, it feels like it's your game to lose, but not your game to win. So, like, if you are not successful in healing people, you know, your team probably won't win. On the other hand, if you're seeing that your team is falling behind, there's no way you can like fight harder or, you know, redouble your efforts to try to get ahead because you're not the one actually doing the fighting.
So when you say like, hey, stop doing like healers, it's like, what is like an alternative like that you would like to see, or like a game that has done that model?
Something like Call of Duty.
Okay.
Where you just regenerate your health.
Oh, yeah.
Or even something like, granted, this does have some healers, but like Killing Floor, where you know, everyone's kind of at least a decent healer.
Yeah.
Sorry, that a lot of that is very much on me just being annoyed at I'm kind of the adult in the room that if our team is lacking something, I'll fulfill that role.
Are you playing this with folks you know, or are you
no, pickups.
Okay. Yeah, pickups.
And gotcha. It is only multiplayer.
So. Right.
So you're saying you get put in the healer position because no one else is playing it, though?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
That sucks.
So, but yeah, you know, it's a cool game. I hope it is able to be successful. I'm not paying for the battle pass because I already did that for Diablo.
This is Game Pass, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah. So I mean, though, like, you know, the monthly, like,
yeah.
But yeah,
it is weird that a third party like Capcom would launch a game like this on Game Pass like that. It's just,
yeah, it is.
Lots of stuff about Game Pass is weird.
Oh yeah, like I said, this is a game that is I think also going to be interesting to see from kind of an industry perspective, in that I think it's. Path to success is quit being a live service game, you know, stop trying to nickel and dime people.
Yeah, but
will, you know, anyone ever actually do that?
Well, they'll keep making those kinds of games as long as they make money.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter if they actually make people happy. Also, it doesn't matter that the bottom fell out of that that's that part of the industry a little while ago. And there's been, like, broadly a turn against them.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm sure Fortnite's still making money.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It just because that became, like, everything is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the
WeChat
problem
of
is
video games.
Yes.
There's enough room for one.
Right. Oh, gosh. Anything else about Exoprimal?
Nope, that's it.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis is the one who asked this, but he's not here, so I'll go ahead and read it. Question Dennis asked was, with Nintendo's new console on the horizon, it's time for speculation. What features or gimmicks do you predict for what I assume will be called the Switch U? The crazier the prediction, the better. And our first response is from Sean, who says, the new powerful Switch to try and have a good battery life. It has solar panels installed to help. Imagine being blinded by screen glare, playing in the bright sunshine just to get a few more minutes of playtime. Get on that bow tie action. The sun is in your hands.
Man, that was such a good game.
Were you aware of this game, Ben? Of what this game was?
This vaguely triggered up some like meme memory, but I don't remember which game it is.
It's called Boktai. The subtitle is "The Sun Is in Your Hands." It was a Game Boy Advance game where the cartridge had a sun sensor on it, and it was like a stealth game about killing vampires. You got like sun bullets for your gun by playing it outside. The problem being that the Game Boy Advance had one of the worst screens imaginable for like highlight situations with glare and things like that. So you could like play the game and not see it, or not see it, but be very bad at playing the game.
Yeah. Also, any effort to make people not play from their couch usually goes south unless you're Pokemon Go.
Yes.
I mean, the other weird thing is it was a Kojima game.
It was. So Hideo Kojima, he contributed, like, he basically said, like, hey, what if a game did this? And then handed it off to a team.
Yeah, it's at least Wikipedia says produced and designed.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was also a pretty hardcore stealth game.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. Ben, what does Mike and then also Eric say?
Mike says GameCube emulation finally.
Yeah. And Eric threw in with GameCube, Nintendo Switch Online. It's basically like, hey, you know, just bring it forward, baby. it's riding on this weird line, like GameCube, where like, okay, do we emulate it or do we re-release the games on the Switch?
Right. I think we all know what we do.
Well, yeah, they're going to re-release the games. Ops.
I like watching Melee players, but it's wild how they play everything on the original hardware and the original TVs and stuff. And there's not, like, emulation is not an option for them.
A superstitious lot. And that'll probably get my house firebombed. So, David, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, it's the Switch boy, and all games will be VR. Not gonna lie, I almost read that as like, it's a me, Switch boy.
It's a Switch boy. Yeah. I mean, and they will all be red. Red and black. Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like, is VR enough out of date for Nintendo to pick it up yet?
I think it takes away from the broad appeal, let's say. I think that they really hit on success with the Switch form factor and moving to anything less portable and less like multi-situational would be a step backward for them appeal wise.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. It's kind of stepping on the news story. We'll talk about it later.
Yeah. Yeah. Peter says, Nintendo always has a way of finding how to get people active with their video games. See the Wii, even the Switch with some of its original release games. So I'm assuming it'll involve getting gamers to be more active. So I'm not going to lie, but I fully expect that Nintendo is going to be one of the next ones to step up, to take the next step in VR technology. With that being said, I hope we get a Ready Player One style of system with the whole Oasis and everything where you pay for a subscription to play games. And then as the devs develop them, you get patches and can go into the world where the patch for the game is and then go crazy. Or, you know, we just interact like in Wreck-It Ralph. Who knows, the world of possibilities is endless. Just imagine running around through portions of Elden Ring and that version of the Oasis, and then getting backstabbed looking down and seeing the sword sticking out of my character's chest. It sounds interesting. Or we end up in a Sword Art Online state where if we die in the game, you die in real life. Does that happen with Sword Art? They send a guy?
Yeah, that's the whole premise of the first season is, yeah.
Wait, I thought that was a game, or is that an anime?
I saw it as an anime. I think it was an anime first.
Huh.
Second season is weird incest.
Oh, of course. Huh. Yeah, no, for all the world, there's a game. Yeah, I guess they made a game out of the anime. Weird. Huh. I mean,
it's a game about an anime about a game.
We're through the looking glass here, people. I don't know if it's going to be immersive or if it's going to be. I mean, Nintendo has not necessarily excelled at their online services. So, yeah, I would bet against VR stuff, but I don't know. Nintendo is unpredictable.
It's true.
Yeah. Ben, what does Random Sum say?
Random Sum says goo based control system.
Is this a takeoff on that PlayStation or that Sony patent about the deformable controller that also like changed temperatures?
I'm just imagining like a Nickelodeon branded thing where it's like you have to keep buying slime so that it can keep shooting on you.
You've got to keep your controller from drying out.
No, it'll be called the Nintendo Bukkake.
Yeah, goo-based control system. I don't know. Does it sense your mood? Is it conductive? Do you play it in a vat? Is it the Nintendo vat? David, what does Case say?
Case says detachable second screen and full backwards compatibility for the DS and 3DS.
That'd be nice.
Behind that.
Yeah. Or at least, DS and 3DS. I mean, just do it like you did on the fucking Wii U, where you could just buy and play those games. Like, it doesn't have to be Nintendo Switch Online, doesn't need to be, but just, like, make it a virtual console. Please give me a virtual console again.
Or just start making 3DS games again.
I think that ship sailed. But it'd be nice to be able to play him. Yeah. I honestly don't know what my prediction will be. Everything's going to be real boring. I think it's going to be like a spec up kind of deal. When I said that Nintendo is unpredictable, I kind of meant it. So I don't necessarily have one. Ben, how about you? Do you have a prediction on this?
I'm just hoping for some wacky peripheral. For when they went from Wii to Wii U, they did something that was still left field. Wii was left field. Switch was the first one where it's nothing crazy goofy about it, and it was very successful. I'll just be very saddened if they just do a Switch 2 and there's no differentiating factor. It's like seeing your friend who is an art major get a business job, and you're oh, man.
I mean, it is kind of funny because the Switch's gimmick is built into the name. You know, mm-hmm. where you can plug this in and, you know, take the controllers off and basically play it in a number of different ways, right?
Or you could not.
Well, yeah. You know, I've got no idea what the what the stats are on people play, because I do it in, you know, I do it in both ways. I go, you know, play it on the big screen for certain games, and I'll play it in bed. I like that versatility, but I've got no idea who is primary portable, who is primary docked, and who, if anybody, takes advantage of both, I end up doing. Primary portable has to be enough of a use case that Nintendo felt comfortable relatively early on selling the Switch Lite, which doesn't have the detachable controllers and can't be docked, and, you know, as far as I know, can't have its screen projected up to a big screen. That may be wrong. You may be able to do it with a USB-C dock kind of thing, but and David, how about you?
So my prediction is that it will be called the Nintendo Dom.
They're just gonna go, it is docked only. Big as possible. It'll tell you what to do.
My more realistic prediction is that it will be overpriced and underpowered.
Yeah, probably. That's the way consoles do, though. Yeah. Well, that was the multiplayer. I mean, we might as well just roll right in to the news, since this relates to that. Thank you, Dennis, for posting that, if you're listening in absentia. And thank you, everybody, for responding. If you would like to participate in these in the future, go to the DuckFeed community group on Facebook and watch the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Stinger.
The end boss.
Okay. Now it's time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. The reason we have that that multiplayer up is because kind of the biggest story that came out was, I'm going to throw it to you, Ben.
Yeah. So they announced this, I think, yesterday as of the time we're recording. But they announced basically that game companies have test versions of the next console that they are going to have at Nintendo, and that it should be coming out in the second half of 2024. The only details they released about the next console is it's going to be similar, where it can be portable like the Switch, but it can be docked in and played on a TV. It's going to have an LCD screen instead of an OLED screen, and it'll come with a cartridge slot for physical games, also like the Switch.
Isn't LCD a step backwards?
I believe so.
Standard switches are still LCD, and LCDs have gotten better. There's nothing saying it cannot be really a really good LCD screen. Mm-hmm. It is disappointing. I think that OLED production is just a very expensive bottleneck, so it is not to the point where they feel like they can make it economically with that. That said, it will be disappointing, because I do enjoy the quality of the OLED screen on the SWOLED.
So I guess the big thing with this story, though, is it's they haven't released any details of what's different. What's the differentiating factor of this?
No, I mean, so when you say they, this is industry reporting. This is not Nintendo coming out and saying, hey guys, you know, we have dev kits out. Dev kits are basically just PCs with, you know, that can roughly play to spec and also have the tools that you need to compile the thing so it'll run, you know,
basically what Nintendo should be releasing but won't.
Yes. Yeah. So, and that's why, I guess, you know, it is not more specific, is just because it is like, here's roughly like the environment in which this is going to run. Go nuts making your game for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens when they finally announce it.
The start of all kinds of discourse about backward compatibility or whatever. It's very funny to hear, it is very funny to hear big publishers, specifically EA, who doesn't make things for the Switch, like big games just don't come out of EA for that system, say like, oh, publishers do not encourage console developers, or, you know, console manufacturers to, you know, make backward compatibility a priority because it tends to hurt the sales of new games at launch. It's like, no, it gives people things to play on the system they just spent a bunch of money on. Like, why do who let this guy in? Who are we? Why are we listening to them?
It would be great if you just had one marketplace to buy games independent of the hardware, like Steam, how it's been for like 15 years for PC games. So,
yeah.
Man, the thing that bums me out about this is I was planning on getting a Switch after Dragon Con, but I'm not going to get that if it's just going to get, you know, replaced in a year or two.
Yeah. I mean, so like talking about timeline too, this is targeted. It's not going to be this fiscal year, so it's going to be after March 31st of 2024. Is the reporting, you know? So like midway through next year, maybe not. I don't know that they would want to make it a holiday release, because why would they do that to themselves?
What do you mean?
Oh, just in terms of like, okay, this thing is going to be brand new and have its highest demand coincide with when people already want this, so like you're going to end up in a PS5 situation where they put it out and then the system's reputation for not being viable ends up killing people's desire to actually attempt to get it.
I see.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I do hope it is backward compatible, because I have a fairly big number of Switch carts. It'd be neat to be able to continue using those. Although I would I never throw anything away, so I would just use my existing Switch to play those. But for convenience's sake, for the principle of the thing, damn it. Yeah. Anything else about the new Switch?
That's all I know about it so far.
Yeah. I got something else Nintendo related that I forgot they were doing. So a while back, the Nintendo Switch Online service, they added the ability to emulate and play, not emulate, they added Game Boy games, Game Boy and Game Boy Advance games to the subscription service, where you can just fire them up and play. And this is related to last week when we were talking about how good Link's Awakening is. If you are down with that good Link's Awakening heat and you have not played Zelda Oracle of Seasons or Zelda Oracle of Ages, now is your time. Because they just added both of those games onto the service. I think a lot of people, when these came out back in 2000, I believe it was, they thought that Nintendo and Capcom were on some like Pokemon shit, where this is basically just two identical games, but you got different, I don't know, items in one or the other. No, these are different games. Like, they both play very similarly. Like, it's, you know, top-down Game Boy Zelda game. But, like, Oracle of Seasons has a combat focus. And Oracle of Ages has, like, a puzzle focus. And if you play both of them and then connect the two of them, then you get, like, the true ending of the game. Like, they are meant to be played together.
And you actually have characters from one show up in the other and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's real cool. I remember enjoying these quite a bit, and it's neat to see them show up. So go take advantage of that if you're looking for something fun. Any other news stories? David, what you got?
So Call of Duty has announced that in the near future, they're going to add, you know, a bunch of new operators and weapons and stuff like that, including the ability to equip a dog. Literally,
like a like swing it around like a bat.
Yeah. Literally, like hook it to your belt, like, you know, have a harness where there's a dog hanging off of you.
Like you're tethered to it, kind of.
Yeah. So, this is actually a thing that the military has where the, you know, their attack dogs are literally carried into combat, strapped to the back of a soldier, like, kind of papoose style before they're ready to be, you know, sicked on an enemy.
You got a puppy, Bjorn, for your war crimes.
Exactly. The, honestly, from the Polygon article, the only thing it seems like we know so far is that will apparently not be possible to kill the dog.
Good.
What that means, though, I don't know. Like, is this just a power-up? Is this just cosmetic? I don't know. Also, they have announced that there will be more tactical pets in the future.
So you're rocking like a like a bag of goldfish, you just throw it like a grenade. You just came from the fair.
I mean, I'm thinking like a sugar glider to the face would be pretty pretty disconcerting.
Nobody sees that coming is the thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know. I know. Like all of this is predicated on the fact that Call of Duty is a good non-exploitive game that people should play, which is not actually a thing that is true.
They had a chance and they kind of scotched it. Yeah.
So yeah,
I mean, guess when you put out a game every year, I guess you got to get creative with it. So tactical pet warfare is the new thing.
No,
I mean, they're just coming off of a cross promotion with The Boys where you could literally get superpowers in game.
Yeah, again, they're trying to get up on that Fortnite everything game thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Fortnite for people who drink Mountain Dew.
I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of Zoomers drinking some Mountain Dew.
I think Mountain Dew has cross-generational appeal. Damn. Yeah. I don't know. That also might be like a regional thing. Like, I don't know. Out here where I am, I see teens crushing Mad Dew.
Teens can crush out here.
Yeah, it's actually kind of concerning. I worry about their bones.
Would you say it's code red where you're at then?
I don't know. It depends on the CDC. We are in a new surge.
I mean, I think
but you can't get surge anymore.
The best is clearly the watermelon Mountain Dew.
Never had it.
That's good.
Okay. Yeah, I used to drink that Mountain Dew energy drink on road trips until my heart started not liking that I did that. Yeah, no, I just
started responding in kind.
Yeah, my heart started saying like, "Hey, you could like don't do this 11 more times." Yeah. Cool. Well, dog crimes for war now. How do you all feel about bundling it up?
Dog crime sounds like a good way to end things.
The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. This has been level number 467. We really appreciate you taking the time. If you want to help us out, you know what to do. You can rate or review. You can subscribe. You can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv and get a whole bunch of extra content and just plain old telling your friends. All of that is good and useful. I see no reason not to keep the admin short. Is there anything I am forgetting? Okay. I have been Cole Ross. You can follow me at Cole Ross on Blue Sky.
I'm David Mysmith, just here.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. Who has titles?
I just have one. It's a late one. Dog Crimes for War.
Okay.
I have Five Nights at Ernie's.
For War. Five Nights. I have a different version of Dog Crimes. I have a puppy Bjorn for War Crimes, but I think Dog Crimes for War is good. And then also I just have the Nintendo VAT talking about the Goobase controls. I like Dog Crimes for War.
All right.
Dog Crimes. Cool. All right. Well, it is decided.